Hello, Simon and Mark here.
Ben Bailey Smith and Amone's inbox is bursting with your correspondence, and they cannot wait to get stuck into potential clients, theories, and everything and anything else in between.
And watch out for an appearance from a knight of the realm.
It's Ben Bailey Smith here, It's Ben Bailey Smith here.
And it's me, Nemoma Taxis, alongside him.
And we're back for another round of Shrink the Inboxes.
Oh, I'm lying. I'm not alongside you. I'm opposite you.
Yeah, it'd be weird to do it shoulder to shoulder, wouldn't it?
Well, so, like, sometimes that's quite good for therapy.
We'd just be side-eyeing each other the whole time.
But it's good for therapy to do that side by side.
Is it?
Walking therapy, especially for men, actually.
I could imagine.
Yeah, because you're not being stared at.
What's your setup? You've got a chair that's way higher than the other person. You're on like a sort of umpire's seat.
You know, like the Beckhams got married on those. Oh, yeah, that
as looking
well.
Down.
Yeah.
And then they're sat on the floor? Or
do you know...
No, seriously, what's the...
To take account of that point, actually, that for some people, face-to-face therapy and therefore being looked at... You know, you think actually making eye contact is quite important for people, but for some people it's really intrusive. So you have to kind of work that out. And you might begin by kind of looking at someone and looking for eye contact and then realizing that actually that is too shaming. So I often have angled my seat. So we're not sitting opposite each other. We are kind of sitting.
There's a science to this. This is important stuff to know.
Yeah.
So your seat's angled. Have you got the same type of chair?
Yeah.
Or are your chairs very different?
Okay. No, same type of chair.
Because I think, you know, in fictional terms, you know, I'm not talking about like Sopranos, but, you know, when you see it in a comedy or you see it sort of like in a sort of slapdash soap opera or something like
that. When you see therapy.
Yeah, you'll have the therapist in the chair and then the person is invariably sort of laid back on a kind of chaise longue looking at the ceiling going, I just don't know what I'm doing with my life.
Well, that is analysis. So it might well be that if you're in analysis, you have got the therapist. Often they'd be sat actually behind your head.
What?
And then
behind you?
Yeah, and they can be. And then you are lying down. And I don't know whether you've ever tried analysis. Have
no,
you ever been?
I'd really like to try it. This is a classic example of me. I'm pretty sure when we first started doing this together, you and I was like, right, can we clear this up? The difference between psychotherapy, psychoanalysis.
We did it in episode one.
We did it,
one,
right? I think it was episode one.
Yeah.
And that was so long ago, I've already forgotten.
Okay.
So psychoanalysis, the person's lying down.
Well, you'd be on some kind of couch, but you don't need to be looking at your therapist because effectively they're holding a space for you to free associate. So we talked a bit about this from Freudian psychotherapy, which means that you are basically saying what comes to your mind.
So that could work on, because when you were talking before about setups, I was just thinking about online, because obviously a lot of people now will be doing therapy online.
Mm.
I've done both. And I would say I found it way more effective being in the room. And I found eye contact useful because it's something that I've struggled with in just out there in the wild.
Yeah.
But psychoanalysis now, I think that could work online, couldn't it?
Because it could. And it will be the same principle as you're describing for face-to-face therapy or psychotherapy, in that for some people, being in the room is actually really essential and they want to be in the room with another body, as in a physical presence. For some people, that's really unnerving, and that will be the difficulty.
I think it's both for me.
Of course.
I think it's really scary and I don't want to do it and therefore I should do it.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
That's a whole subject.
This is going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
That's what I need. I don't want to be comfortable.
As a therapist, you're trying to be aware of what that is and perhaps bring awareness to it together to think about what's happening for your client.
Mm. All right. Well, there we go. We kicked off with some geography of the therapy room. We're here with another round of Shrink the Inboxes, which I'm genuinely excited about. You know why? Because it's a weird sense of freedom with this. Obviously, we have freedom to do what we want in the regular show.
Of course.
But because we're talking about this specific character or this particular behavioural trait, you know, we have to try and come back to that. We got to rein each other in and stay focused. Whereas with this, we can sort of focus on whatever we want for however long we want.
Uh-oh, the reins come off.
Yeah, I don't care anymore.
No.
I've grown a beard.
I know you
have.
So no, who knows what's going to happen? The beard is back.
Obviously, the crux of this shrink the inbox is your correspondence with us, and I think that's the other thing that gets me excited: the fact that you guys are listening and you've got strong opinions and you're sending them in, and I just love seeing the different approaches and ideas that you guys are bringing to the table, man.
And so, TV shows that we haven't come across. I mean, like, absolutely. Ben and I can only watch a certain amount of telly, so
yeah.
There's often shows that we're like, or that we've heard of and we haven't considered for a character here.
There you go. So we're going to be reading out some of these and responding and just seeing where the conversation takes us. Little reminder, send your thoughts on any of this to us. Suggestions of future characters, of course we love those, but you know, all your theories, all your ideas, correspondence to shrinkthebox@sonymusic.com. I just had a weird thought. I just thought it'd be nice to encourage people to send voice notes as well.
Oh yeah.
To hear people's voice. Because you know when people get really passionate about a show, I think it's quite entertaining.
Yeah.
Listening to them. Do you know what I mean? Just say like no longer than a minute or something.
Yeah.
Anywho,
good thinking.
It's just good audio fun. I love it when people get angry about stuff as well, about things on shows.
Like points of view.
Yeah, like points on view. Tits on Game of Thrones.
We could definitely do that.
Okay.
Have an entire show of that.
What have we got to look forward to email-wise?
Well, coming up, we read emails from you about why Fraser is still relevant today.
Oh, 100.
Ben tells us more about the origins of improv. This is one of our tangents that we went off on. You did.
I've already done it.
Yeah, we're going to do it again. We hear from a certain Salman Rushdie on what it was like to act in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Wow.
Plus, The Last of Us, Euphoria, and Bad Sisters. This is a huge warm welcome to Shrink the Inbox.
All right. First up, we have one from Ivy.
Okay.
Who says, hey, Ben and Namone, I'm in therapy at the moment and I absolutely love the podcast. It's so interesting to learn about these complicated characters and see some similarities between their problems and what I talk about in therapy myself. I want to recommend that either Connell or Marianne or both from Normal People.
I was wondering, okay,
sit on your sofa, because they both have really fascinating relationships with their families, partners and friends, influenced by struggles with their mental health. Another suggestion is John Luther. And we talked about, side note, John a lot in series one, and umd and ard. So he's always there in the background. His many experiences of trauma and loss, Ivy continues, shaped him into such a rich character. And I think he'd make a very interesting client. Thank you so much for making such an entertaining and fascinating podcast.
Oh, Ivy, first off, thank you very much for those kind words.
Yeah, it mirrors what my mother said to me yesterday.
What did your mother
say? Sorry, not yesterday, it was Sunday. She came, I had lots of family come around for a Sunday lunch. And she said, I finally worked out how to listen to your thinging. And I was like, oh, what did you think? She's like, it's so good. She was like, she could not hide her surprise at two things.
Surprise.
Number one, it's really good. It's like really professional. And then the second thing was, and you sound so smart. You sound like you know what you're talking about. You really sound like you know what you're talking about.
Ben, for you.
Now, you know, you can read that in two ways. Like, oh, wow, his mum just doesn't rate him. But actually, the reason I say it is because she is also a working therapist. So
it means
she's
so much.
Played it. Yeah, she's played it to her colleagues and they're like, oh, this is great.
What?
So, you know, we've got, you know, there's teams of professionals who like this stuff. So.
Okay. Thank you very much to Ben's mum and the extended team.
And thank you, Ivy.
Ivy, I have to say, Normal People. I had read Normal People and Conversations with Friends before I saw Normal People, the show. I loved it. Echoes of teenage trials and tribulations.
Mm. Yeah, man. Normal People. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I did, you know, remember we talked about Game of Thrones and the boobs. I did find that there was maybe one too many sex scenes. Maybe that's just me becoming old and prudish. But I was
surprised.
Do they need to be? Do we need all of this again? I'd quite like to get on with the story. And also, ooh. I think the fact that they were school kids made me slightly uncomfortable.
Well, Sally Rooney wrote Normal People when she was 27, but she does do teenage angst and relationships really well.
Oh my God, she nails it. So hard to do once you've left that world. Physically.
To kind of get in there. And I suppose maybe my adolescent self state and we've talked about self-states, mm-hmm, haven't we, mm-hmm, was kind of latched onto normal people, and that's who was really enjoying it.
Yeah.
I mean, talking of adolescence, someone has emailed us saying they want us to cover Euphoria. Euphoria is based around a group of high school friends that covers, now the show covers sex, trauma, social media, drugs. It's Kira in London, actually, who says this. I'd have Rue, R-U-E, from Euphoria, because she showed how much of an impact drug addiction can have. Like, she knew how badly it was hurting her family and friends and even herself, but she just couldn't help it. So Rue's the character from Euphoria. Kira goes on, her character shows how hard it is to understand real life people with addictions, because I think, of course, she needs rehab, but ultimately she's just craved and needed love and attention, as it was almost like she was taking drugs because she had no one to talk to. As supportive as her mum and sister tried to be by checking her into rehab multiple times, it just wasn't the type of support she needed, says Kira. And that's evident when we see how many times she relapses in the space of a year or two. Rue is a character that is honestly devastating to watch, as we see secondhand how much of an impact addiction has on not just the drug taker, but those around them as well. And Kira winds up by saying it's very relevant to teenagers because it shows that things that we might consider innocent or just a normal thing to do, like going to parties, how they can turn into something so much more that then ends up having such a detrimental impact. Oh, Kira.
Thanks,
that's
Kira.
Sad. There's loads to get into there.
Yeah,
there?
I'm glad that it's having that effect on viewers, because it's the kind of thing, because it's about young people, will watch it. It could easily be quite irresponsible with how, yes, it shows something like that. I've not seen the show, so I can't comment either way, but it seems like Kira, who's clearly intelligent, has watched this and got a lot of that responsibility from it. She even says, doesn't she, says it felt like she was taking drugs because she had no one to talk to. And we've talked ourselves, haven't we, about the dangers of keeping connection from your everyday life.
And what
isolating
might happen,
yourself,
yeah, in,
you know,
isolation, absolutely.
Yeah, very popular show. Euphoria is actually one of the most watched HBO shows of all time.
First,
not
was?
By me, but
no, obviously. And
you
could
guess who the first was.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'm hoping Sopranos must be second. HBO.
Oh, I would have thought so.
It's got to be top four, isn't it? We'll find out.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we'll work that one out. Actually, Zendaya, who you know plays Rue, is an executive producer on the series. She's openly talked about how tough it was to play such an emotional character and the physical pain it caused her to play Rue, including the intervention scene where her mum and sister, that she talks about, still having scars on her legs from.
Mm.
It sounds like they've really
have you
gone
seen
into
it?
The character. I haven't seen Euphoria.
No, it wasn't really marketed to us, which is a big part of it. I think
it's
huge,
it?
Around like sixth formers and that kind of age group, early 20s. And
stuff. Again,
and Zendaya is Zendaya, right?
So. Of course. So that would be an automatic draw. And interesting, like you say, that it's having that kind of effect for us to receive an email of the likes that Kira's written.
Yeah, well, we have smart listeners. That's what happens, isn't it? You get smart people involved, you get smart listeners.
And this one is from Rena, and she doesn't say where she's from. Dear Ben, and hello, Namon. Hello, Rena. I'm not normally a writing into show sort of person, but I'm overjoyed that Shrink is back. And although I've never really sat down and watched Frasier, it seemed to be permanent fixture on Channel 4 in the mornings, yep, for years during my student days. We agree. I thought I'd take a listen. Who knew there was so much to this seemingly fluffy little comedy with the aspirational snob in the bad suit leading the charge? I was fascinated by how Eunomone compared the conflict between Frasier, a Freudian analyst, and Niles, Jungian, to the real-life conflict of those famous thinkers.
Agreed. I love that.
Rena says, I thought it would also have been interesting to talk about how Frasier, who's possibly having a midlife crisis, could be comparable to and standing for the mood of the early 90s, where highbrow culture, French restaurants, independent films, mid-century collectible furniture, high art, was peaking and would eventually be moving out of fashion as a sign of culture. Frasier was hanging on to the conspicuous consumerism of the 80s and trying to preserve it in aspic along with his youth. That's a great thought, yeah, Rena. A bit kind of modernism, postmodernism, mm-hmm, moving into modernist. No, I can't remember what they've moved into next. By the end of the 90s, says Rena, a less elitist culture was beginning to be celebrated, from street food fans, farmers markets, to box sets and IKEA. Authenticity came in. And a bit more, as we said, sincerity. So perhaps Frasier stood for the last hurrah of these pursuits, and that's why we laugh at him and the jokes work. Perhaps the writers could see it coming. It is mainstream audience laughing at the man who is whining and dining himself into obscurity, and we feel sorry and embarrassed for how short-sighted he's being.
Anyway, says Rena, food and one too many glasses of Chateau Neuf de Pape 47 for thought. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to future eps that will ignite my interest in TV shows I may have overlooked. That's cheers,
brilliant.
Rena.
That's a brilliant email.
Thank you so much.
That's what we're talking about here. That's we need these smarts to add
always,
to what we've
please.
Got. So nice.
It kind of fuels up, makes our synapses
and
fire.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more how well Frasier stands up, original Frasier,
in
2024. It is well worth revisiting if you haven't already. You know, Frasier being a spin-off from Cheers, I feel like the 90s and 2000s were rife with spin-offs. Like, it's like a corny kind of thing you wouldn't do anymore, even though Frasier's such an amazing example of it.
Feels like it's done less now. You're absolutely right. So go on.
You can't call it a spin-off or a sequel or even a prequel. You have to say it's like from the universe. It's like a sort of, you know.
Oh, yeah. From the world.
Or you could reboot like with Shogun.
Oh, yes. Yes, you can.
But spin-off makes it sound wacky and zany, which Better Call Saul is not wacky and zany.
No.
Do you know what I mean? But it is technically a spin-off of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, the characters taken from the original. Better Call Saul, Seinfeld, and
Curb. That's an interesting... I don't think it is. I think it's a completely separate series, but it blurs the lines because Seinfeld exists in the show. That's a really good point. It could be the only spin-off that's not a spin-off. Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul is akin exactly to Cheers and Frasier. Frasier's a minor character in Cheers.
Yes.
A very funny one who they see as like a fan's favorite. So they build him out, create his world.
Yeah.
And that world is Frasier, the series.
And Saul is the
Saul
same.
Saul Goodman, exactly the same. If you go back and watch Breaking Bad, he's quite a basic character, kind of two-dimensional.
Yeah.
But he's a fan favorite. They build him up, flesh him out, and you get Better Call Saul.
Now we've got to untangle.
Curb Your Enthusiasm is not like there's not a character from Seinfeld who we journey with into Curb.
Well,
I mean, there is and there isn't because
exactly
it's
you say I, that.
Curb Your Enthusiasm is a world wherein the concept of Seinfeld exists, right?
Okay,
which means
George plays Larry David.
Yes,
in Seinfeld, Larry David is in Curb.
Yes. But I still have an issue because we're into a zone where the writer is there literally saying, I created this. And then we're watching a show about the writer's life.
Okay, you really want this to make some sort of sense.
I'm saying it doesn't make sense.
Okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It doesn't make sense to call Curb a spin-off of Seinfeld, even though in a weird way it kind of is because it couldn't exist without Seinfeld.
Yeah, we're existing in that really lovely, murky, messy, tangly area. You like that? Do you like being in the murky, messy, tangly area?
Yeah, I do actually.
I thought you might.
Yeah, now that I've got a beard, that's where I am every day. You know, if you look back, there used to be a thing, I'm sure, when I was a kid. So I'm guessing like 80s or 90s, where you just get a character. Americans used to do this.
Yeah.
You just get a character randomly from another show.
Yeah.
Would appear in
you'd get a
the
kind
show
of,
as the character.
Cameo.
Oh, a cameo. Yeah. Yeah, a cameo.
Word up. Sorry.
Word up.
I am
word
just
up.
About to. I'm not going to sing. It's a cameo.
Yeah, cameo. But like quite weird to have a character written by a different person from a completely different show appear as that character in...
I have to find a way to get us off top. Hang on a second. Sorry. I think I might have one. So you're talking successful spin-offs, not spin-offs, spin-offs.
Mm.
But some were not as successful.
I think the majority of spin-offs are not successful. Joey exclamation mark. Perfect example. Who was clambering for Joey exclamation mark? Was there clamor?
Favourite character from Friends or one of, perhaps?
I think he was... Yeah, I mean, Chandler was my favourite. But yeah, maybe Joey was second.
We covered Chandler earlier in the season. I wonder how well a spin-off would have worked for him and his parental problems, commitment issues, funny quips. Exactly.
Better than Joey.
Sounds like a
exclamation
winner.
Exclamation mark. For sure. Okay, this just in. This sometimes happens on this show. You know, we'll be talking with our producer, Selena, and, you know, the conversations where we get taken.
The rabbit hole.
Oh, my God. And we've just gone down. Thinking of spin-offs.
Okay,
the most spun off show of all time, surely, Happy Days.
Okay. So Joni and Chachi,
I remember.
Yeah.
I think I'd forgotten that Laverne and Shirley was a spin off.
I don't think I'd even.
Blanksy's Beauties.
What?
Out of the Blue. The Fonz, I remember. The Fonz and the Happy Days gang.
He was kind of.
Laverne and Shirley with the Fonz, which is the animated version.
Okay.
They often used to make cartoons
yeah.
out of these live action shows. And then the most mind blowing.
Mork and Mindy.
No.
Mork and Mindy is a spin-off of Happy Days. I'm sorry if everybody listening right now is like, come on, of course Mork and Mindy is. You idiot, get with it. You know, it's like 40 years ago. I never knew that, but apparently Robin Williams appeared as Mork in one episode, my favourite Orkin, and he was given his own sitcom off the back of it. Oof. That's how powerful Robin Williams' performances always were. Thank you for that, Selena. That's incredible.
Consider mind blown.
Yeah. That's what I love about this show. We have those moments, don't we? Mind-blowing moments. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to come back to Curb Your Enthusiasm, particularly looking at improv, and we're going to hear a little from Sir Salman Rushdie himself on what it's like to meet Larry David and actually act in the show. So see you after the ads, unless you're a subscriber to The Take, in which case we'll see you faster than you can complete my thought. Ready? Pretty. We are back. Namon, hello again.
Hi.
Are you enjoying this shrink box, shrink the inbox?
We are going down some surprising rabbit holes.
It's what happens when you take the reins
off. Yes, I'm loving it. It's great.
What happens. You know, when you ask me about one of my passions.
No, stop. Finish your thought.
No, they finished it for me, hopefully, before the ad break.
Pretty.
When we were recording the Curb episode, we got onto the subject of unscripted comedy, right? And I mean, I'm told I was in my element. I don't remember this.
Oh, you were. And I asked you, if you got the call, would you like to be in that kind of improvisational comedy? Yeah. Go on, I'm going to remind you. This is what you said.
I'd love it. I mean, to be fair, I've done it. I didn't get the call from Curb, but... You know, working with Gervais back in the day, I did an episode of a show called Derek, which had that same skeletal structure. And even if you watch the episode that I did, most of the scenes that I'm in, bar a couple, improvised on the day. We did the same thing on the movie David Brent, Life on the Road. There's this direct through line for Gervais to David from Christopher Guest, who really was the sort of... He was kind of the pioneer of this approach to long-form comedy, you know, stuff like Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Exactly the same structure, skeletal script. Here's point A and here's point Z. You guys get me there. So if you watch Spinal Tap, you'll see it says written by Christopher Guest and the entire cast.
So skeletal script.
For example, the first time structure. My character in that, who's called Dion... He comes into the old people's home. He's been sent on community service to work there. And there's a young carer working there who's over from the NHS, played by Holly Dempsey. And Ricky was just like, right, you get distracted immediately and start chatting her up, okay? But we still want you to be lovable, so try and make that work. And me and Holly literally just improvised a scene and then Ricky would come in and go, that bit's hilarious, do that again, shorten it. You know, a bit more economic with this bit, but we'd develop it together on camera.
So you're almost writing it backwards. Yeah,
kind of. Improvisation is an incredible skill. Mm. The key is losing your self-consciousness and just being in the moment. Then you know what to say. If you think about it, you do it every day in conversation, like we're doing right now. So the same goes for comedy. If you can remove the whole idea like, oh my God, what I say has to be funny.
Yeah.
You got to react. And you see... On Curb, if you watch it really closely, sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely fine because it feels so real, because it is real. They're taking pops and then maybe the response could have been a lot funnier, but the fact that it's real makes it more lovable.
So when do you get to a point when you know you've got the stuff that you want to record? I suppose at some point you've just got to go, right, that's it.
Well, the big issue is corpsing, because you might do something that's so funny that no one sees coming. You probably will. And then the other person corpses and the take is ruined, or you corpse while you're saying it.
And just to note, for those who don't know, corpsing is when actors or comedians burst out laughing in the middle of a scene with totally, like they lose it.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's called that in the theatre and the drama world. But I think it's really interesting that it's most often used in the comedy
world. Comedy.
Because that's all we talk about, dying or killing, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the stakes we play with. So then you might have to
just try and do it again.
That's tricky.
Which is not quite the same,
yeah.
But you can cut it all together and it'll be fine. And actually, again, if you watch Curb closely, Richard Lewis in particular, who plays Richard Lewis and Larry David as Larry David, are corpsing quite a lot, and Jeff, but it sort of fits the scene.
Yeah, Jeff particularly. We should note at this point, actually, sad loss to comedy earlier this year.
Richard Lewis,
R.I.P.
Rest in peace. And a sort of absolute monster of the stand-up scene in America. British audiences will only know him from Curb.
Yeah.
But in America, even with all those seasons of Curb, he's still considered like a seminal
stand-up
comedian. Yeah, he had years and decades under his belt before then.
Amazing.
In fact, they make a joke about it in Curb, but it's actually true, that he is credited worldwide with being the first person to talk about she was the from hell, or he was the from hell.
Oh, that's attributed
mad,
to him.
It?
That's incredible.
That's mad, isn't it? To yeah. have a phrase that concrete.
Like, yeah.
Attributed to you. So Richard Lewis is a genuine legend of the stand-up world. And their back and forth. So almost always identical and yet always funny.
Funny.
God, it's quite weird listening to myself.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about improv. And as you may or may not know, that's an example. We record more tape than we use for Shrink the Box. And then, of course, we edit that down. So you can hear from that, sometimes we go off down very little enjoyable roads. Down little very enjoyable roads.
Very enjoyable little roads.
That's it. That's the one I wanted. Those roads are little, but they are very enjoyable. Now, that brings me to one of our sister podcasts, How to Fail with Elizabeth Day. She got to speak to Salman Rushdie a few weeks ago. The world famous author actually had a part in Curb Your Enthusiasm. This is season 8, when Larry David literally wrote an entire season around Salman's cameo. In the show, Larry David has a fatwa put on his head by the Ayatollah Khomeini, as Salman did for writing the Satanic Verses, yeah. Of course. So here's Elizabeth Day asking him all about it.
I mentioned in the introduction that you had that cameo in Bridget Jones and that you did this fantastic Curb Your Enthusiasm, which, I mean, I imagine most of it was improvised.
All of it.
You were so good.
Thank you. It was so funny. It was very scary because, of course, the people on the show are masters of improv. And I didn't want to be the only person who wasn't any good. But I guess I got away with it, you know. But what happened was, I mean, I didn't really know Larry David. I mean, I'd very casually met him, shake hands, say hello, but that was it. But then he, out of the blue, or his agents called my agents and said he'd like to talk to me. So we spoke on the phone and he said he had this idea and did I want to do it? And I said, well, can I see a script? And he said, well, that's difficult because there's no script. So then we just discussed it on the phone and then I thought, you know, if we've reached the point at which we can make fun of, because this was all about Larry David getting a fatwa against him.
Yes.
Know, and wanting my advice. I said, if we could have fun with it, then actually that's a kind of victory. And so I thought, okay, I'll do it. And I was only there for 2 days, but it was very, very enjoyable. It's what they call guided improv. So they would say, here's the setup, you're in this scene and this is what's happening. And during the course of the scene, you've got to reach this point. But how you get there is up to you.
Mm.
And that was scary. And then the most frightening thing is that when you do it, and they say, yeah, that was great. That was great. We've got that. Now do it differently. Do it differently? I mean, I just was really hard to do it at all.
Yes.
What they do is they overshoot a lot. And I think that's because if you're no good, they can cut you out.
Mm.
But they didn't cut me out.
You were very good.
Thank you.
He was great.
Is that ringing some bells for you in terms of improv?
Absolutely,
man. From here to
there.
Yeah,
yeah. He described it perfectly, that guided improv is exactly what it is. You know what story needs to be told. And so you're going to use your performance skills, your acting skills, in order to tell that story. But you've got to let the funny happen. And it's interesting that Salman did such a good job because people say, well, he's not an actor.
Mm.
He's not a comedian. But actually, to deliver comedy in those moments of improvisation, it's important not to think about delivering comedy. Deliver the story and react. Just react in the moment. And like you said, they're going to overshoot. So just keep reacting. Something funny will come. The biggest mistake you can make in guided improv is to think, okay, this is a story. At some point, I'm going to say this really funny line that I've got in the back of my head. This will work. This will drop. It never does. Never does, because natural action and reaction is endlessly fascinating to watch.
And of course, he has that in abundance because of his writing.
Yeah, yeah. He's an intelligent dude. He's talking about something that the real Rushdie knows everything about in quite a profound bloody way, because it was his life on the line. And it makes it even more incredible as a watch, because you're thinking, these are two men who've managed to make a gag out of a fatwa. There's few things that are less funny than a fatwa.
I mean, so, I think that's interesting that he winds up saying you can kind of have fun in the end with the fatwa. And that was a victory. I wonder if it is some reclamation of power or kind
definitely.
Of reframing.
Definitely.
Experience.
Definitely. You know, you look at what he's gone through, and even more recently, how horrific that's been as well. This is a man who is a survivor, and a man who understands more than most, more than the average person, the power of words, you know? It's unbelievable, his life, in terms of just writing words down, like what that's created. It's mad.
And it's a shame we couldn't get to, we kind of centered on season 7, didn't we, for Curb?
Yeah, because how do you pick with comedy? It's a bit harder, isn't it, when there's not...
Much harder.
You know,
the amount of material that you have in Curb. But it's well worth the revisit. We really went in deep on Larry David, if you're interested in Curb.
Yeah,
and
also we should say, you know, because we shout out Kermode and Mayo every week. We do have other sister shows, and How to Fail is one of them. And if you don't, I'm sure you'd be living under a rock if you don't know about Elizabeth Day and How to Fail. But if you don't, or you have and you haven't listened, I couldn't recommend it highly enough. It's a brilliant show, and it's genuinely inspiring as well as entertaining. And it's another one we're proud to have alongside us in this incredible stable that's getting hairier by the week.
Here comes that hair.
All right, we got an email here from Viv, where she not only thanks us for some of the episodes we've already done, but suggests two really good programs for us to cover. One's a little closer to home for me. She says, hey, Ben and Namone.
I try to hold out on the String the Boxes, where I haven't seen the series yet, but sometimes I just can't help myself. So I've listened to and enjoyed the ones on The Sopranos, Queen's Gambit, Succession and The White Lotus, and now can't wait to watch them. My favourites include your episodes featuring Happy Valley, Friends, The Wire and Ozark.
All great, Viv. I have to agree. They're great episodes.
You know, like when you're in it watching the shows and then you get to talk about it, it's like...
You did such a great job on those series.
Well, thank you very much, man. It's much easier when you've got shows that are as brilliantly written and creatively constructed as those, because there's so much to dig into, you know? Viv says, the characters I'd like to hear you talk about include Joel or Ellie in The Last of Us, and anyone from Bad Sisters. You see?
Love Bad Sisters. Yeah. That's my pet. We're definitely going to do Bad Sisters.
Did we talk about Bad Sisters?
Yeah, Sharon Horgan.
I need to get over my super ego and id and watch Bad Sisters.
I'm afraid there is a little bit to overcome for you in that department.
Nearly
got a part in Bad Sisters, which we'll talk about when we talk about Bad Sisters. But you can do it. You can take that. Or maybe not.
No, of course I can. Just side note, sorry to tread all over your email, Viv. Have you seen the announcement about Last of Us Season 2?
No.
Do you know who's going to star in it, be a guest star across the series?
If you say you, now I'm going to be...
No. Catherine O'Hara.
Who's coming up as...
Schitt's Creek, yeah, man.
Moira.
Can't wait to do it. Anyway, she says, please make more STBs. We will. So that I can continue to lose myself in these entertaining discussions of the characters I love.
Okay, so how about this? Rebecca's written in saying, the series is excellent. Thank you, Rebecca. Especially as you've chosen series that are relevant to those of us not in the UK. Thank you, I'm in Ireland. What about Franklin Saint from Snowfall? Mm. I watched this series right to the end and this character is so unpredictable and complex. I'd love you to get to the bottom of what makes him tick. Rebecca.
Never even heard of Snowfall.
No. Snowfall, discuss.
All right.
We need to go, right, that's
we'll look into that, work it out.
That is definitely one for the shrink list. Franklin's character is complex and would make a great person in the chair.
Okay, so here we have some information, thank God. So this is a glossier drama about the crack problem in America than The Wire might be. It's set in the 80s in LA, and we will be talking more about The Wire later in this series because we're going to come back and do Bubbles, which I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently that's what Snowfall is about. So
yeah, maybe have a look at that. Okay, back to our regular scheduled program next week, right? So who are we looking forward to next time?
Well, if you follow Jennifer Aniston's career after she played Rachel in Friends, you'll know that one of her finest moments is this.
Estimated time of arrival was...
Can I interrupt?
Yeah, yes.
Hi, sorry. We haven't been honest with you. I mean, not like with the news. I'm not talking about that. I'm actually talking about ourselves.
What the f*** are they doing? Get ready to go to tape early.
Ready to
tape?
We
don't tell you everything, even a little bit. I mean, this whole place, it's really different than what it may appear to you. And there are some really bad things going on here. There are bad people and...
Are we doing this?
Yeah. You wanna?
We should just tell the truth quickly. They're gonna cut us off. Yes. We have 1 minute.
Let's go.
Roll the tape!
Yeah, Reese Witherspoon also in that clip with Jennifer Aniston. And it is obviously The Morning Show, which I knew nothing about until I had to watch it for Shrink the Box. Mate, I loved it. Mm. I absolutely just rinsed it, watched it all so quickly. And it's done really well, won loads of awards, so well done it.
Oh, I'm so pleased that you loved it as well. I did. I was immediately drawn to this. It's the story of two TV news anchors, Alex, played by Jennifer Aniston, Bradley by Reese Witherspoon. One very experienced and one rookie who are living through the Me Too period. Jennifer Aniston's colleague, Mitch, played by the brilliant Steve Carell, not the first time he's going to get mentioned on the show, gets sacked for her sexual harassment, and we see the fallout from that. Series one on Apple TV.
Oh, can't wait for that.
As ever, we'd love to keep on hearing more from you about which actual fictional TV characters you think we should be talking about and taking to the kind of fictional couch we have here at Shrink the Box. So theories, thoughts on what we've already said, alternative theories, always welcome. And ideas for TV shows as well. shrinkthebox@sonymusic.com.
Yeah, and if you can't be bothered to type, why not just record your voice and send it over? Give us like a minute of audio.
Oh, you could do a voice
note. Your strong opinion.
Brilliant.
Send us a voice note. Same address, shrinkthebox@sonymusic.com. Thanks to the production team. Production management is Lily Hambly. Assistant producer is Scarlett O'Malley. Studio engineer is Theo Schlossman. And the mix engineer is Josh Gibbs. The senior producer is Selena Ream. And executive producer is Simon Poole. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, wherever you get your pods to get new episodes. And tell all your mates, everyone you know, tell them to listen, because I feel bad like forcing you to do stuff. So maybe if it comes from you rather than me, it'd be better, because you know them, they're mates of yours, and then we can make more. And if you want to listen to the show and Kermode and Mayo's aforementioned take ad-free, plus their bonus content, subscribe to Extra Takes, become a shrinker, start a free trial by clicking try free at the top of the Shrink the Box show page on Apple Podcasts, or by visiting extratakes.com.
I think I know the answer to this question.
Go on.
Were you always good at doing your homework?
Me?
Yeah.
No. What I was good at school was, you know, when they say, can we have someone read this chapter, please? Can we have a reader?
Oh.
Always the first person.
First hand up.
I bet that's surprising to you, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
The man who never shuts the cup.
She's like, what? Not you, Shrinking Violet in the back. No, I can't possibly read that.
Me?
Who, me?
Me?
Well,
I wouldn't possibly dare take the limelight from any of these other deserving children, sir.
Look, gimme.
Oh, I didn't care what it was. Stupid accent, I'm doing it.
Let me add it. Well, in terms of homework, it would be great if you wanted to watch some of the programmes before we analyse them. It might be worth kind of revisiting some of the shows if you haven't watched them for a while as well. And you can head over to the show notes of this episode. We have a list of who's coming up on the STB couch.
And you've probably heard they're in production right now for Peaky Blinders, the movie.
Yes.
Namone told me about this and I was very surprised, and it is actually happening.
It is. Big tick. Killian's in it.
And in a few episodes' time, Aunt Polly is going to be our client. So
yes, she is.
All the more reason to give that show a revisit. So we shall see you very soon. Thanks for all your correspondence. And we'll see you on the next Shrink the Inbox. If you can't wait for that, we'll be back next Tuesday with another Shrink the Box.
We will. Thank you.
Ta-da.